What is happening, good people here at the Contractor Secrets Podcast? Got Yanni Fakaris here, Custom Renovations up in Jersey. Brother, man, thanks so much for doing this, man. I'm selfishly wanting to pick your brain just because you're innovating at such a high level. Weirdly enough, I've known you from afar for about 7 years, man, seeing you in the chat rooms and stuff. So just kind of always been a fan of your standard, man. How are you today? Thanks for joining, brother.
Yeah, I'm good. Working, busting it out, you know, like you should be.
That's right.
Kick out today to get it quiet. So,
I kind of did a little research on your process, man. You've got what's unique about Yanni. Just for a little backstory, he's got an amazing cabinet refinishing process that you don't see much of. I just wanted you to take the wheel, man. I'd love to hear about this process, and I don't know if I asked you this a little while ago, or you might have just posted it. Is it true that you don't have any shop employees, or is it? I would love to hear tell us about it, man. That's a big topic. I'll let you take it.
So we've been training people. Let me turn this radio down. I'm sorry. Hang
on. Go for it.
I mean, you want to hear it? That's gonna get loud. So
there you go. That's better.
We've been teaching a 2-3 man. We call it, you know, you can call it whatever you want, but a 2-3 man $1 million operation. That's, you know, that's the cut and dry, the nuts and bolts of it is how do you make seven figures with the least amount of people as possible? One time I had 20 guys, 19 guys myself, makes it 20. It's not as easy as you think. The margins are a lot smaller with a lot more guys. You know, you're babysitting, especially in the last 10, 15 years of employees. So we wanted to niche it out, get really good at something specific that paid the highest dollar amount, and cut our staff as much as we possibly could. In about 2016, my mom was a tech teacher. My dad was a painter. So a lot of the stuff we do is AI-based. So I started building artificial intelligence around. I built Sophia the Robot 2017, got rid of the girls in the office because I put a program on their account. They were on their computer like 80% of the time at the time was like MySpace, and Facebook was kind of popular. So it was a waste of good company money. And at the end of the day, I needed phone calls to be answered as quickly as possible and estimates that went out. I didn't really, the filler calls, you know, where are the guys? It was kind of nonsense what we're paying the staff for. So $40 an hour, two people. I hired a call center. Actually, I got it from my doctor. He paid $50 a month. Now it's probably like 100, 24 hours a day, US-based call center. So that took out the necessity of having somebody just pick up the phone call or when I couldn't get it. I still use it to the day. All the guys that I train, they use the same thing. We all kind of collectively use the same call center. What they're going to do is they're really going to reduce the need for you to constantly pick up the phone or have somebody in the office. So that's a huge, huge factor. And especially a US-based call center is going to make it a lot easier for you to get the information that you need. I really needed the information to get to a landing page or a website, wherever you have. Grab the key facts. I need a name, name, email address, mobile, and what you're looking for. The robot takes over from there. It grabs photos. It engages with the person, the client, as a real person in the office. Her name is Sophia, and gets photos from the client of whatever they're looking for. So if they need their cabinets painted, she's going to ask for pictures of the kitchen. If they're looking for exterior, they're going to snap photos of the outside, et cetera, et cetera. That's a lot of headache. So every AI task eliminates about 45 minutes of human task. Takes a robot about 1/1000th of a second to do 40 minutes of human interaction, you know, transporting information from one system to the next. So there's two people out of the equation, costs are reduced, and we're getting to the client as fast as possible. That is a 10,000 foot view of how you streamline the inner office communication with the client as fast as possible. The most important thing in business, that is what it is getting to a client within 30 seconds to a minute after the lead comes in. If you're not doing that in today's market, they're going on to the next person on Google or Facebook or whoever. Yep. You know, they're getting shared and tagged, and they're just going to go to them. They don't know how professional you are. They just know the next guy is readily available if they are. Yeah. The second problem most people have is they don't communicate with their client at all, and they definitely don't do it quickly. So Those are really important to knock out of the gate if you want to make a lot more money. It's not about having the biggest company out there. You know, it really isn't. It's about margin. It's about what you're making at the end of the day, and how do you process that as best as possible. You can have the best finishing system in the world, but if you can't communicate the quote, and you're not going to get them all, but if you can't communicate the quote via text, via email, within 5 minutes, 4 or 5 minutes, I would say is our prime target. I'm going to take it, or the next guy is going to take it, or after they see this video, someone's going to try to rebuild Sophia the Robot and do it themselves. So the nuts and bolts of that is client information into the system, estimate out within 5 minutes. That's key. That's going to grow your business. The next thing we do is I don't want to use the wrong words, but I am very critical. I'm an asshole to work for because it's either my way, the right way, or you're fired.
You are a perfectionist, brother. I've seen what you do and how you do it, man. And we love it. Go ahead.
Yeah. So you're probably going to see a lot of other videos. You know, Tanner's going to podcast with a lot of other people. But when you do things at a different level, it's a lot different. So there's a lot of processes out there to how to refinish cabinets. And then there's some really, really good ones. Most people just fall short of it because they don't want to buy the equipment and they don't want to take the extra couple minutes that it needs. It's really not that hard of a process when you do it. It's probably the same amount of time that most people are spending. They're just doing it out of order. The specifics that I'm very critical about is prep. So I come, if you watch any of the other videos I post, it's probably cooking. So cooking and painting are very similar. 95-98% of the time isn't eating. It's preparing for what the 2% or 5% of the time that you're actually going to perform, like the finish. In our shop, in the home, our prep is, I would say, by far better than anybody else's. And how you get a really good finish is you got to prep really well. Undersanding, oversanding is my biggest pet peeve, and then application thickness and viscosity of the paint. So if you nail those two things, you're going to get a really, really, really good finish. We can get into equipment, what I use, what I don't use, why I don't use it, and we've used it all. So I sprayed in people's houses, I sprayed in the garage, I had a shop in my basement. We've done everything that people are doing. We just did it better, and we were cleaner at it to get to this level. The third is, besides prep, the next is the projection of your business. And are you putting money aside to get better equipment? If you're not improving your actual business itself with the better equipment that's out there, you're going to hurt yourself. I've had 4 elbow procedures because I work. I don't know if you ever catch me working on Sundays. I work 7 days a week. Most of the time we're working 12, 15 hour days. Not every day is like that, but most of the time we're banging out 70, 80 hours a week. Of work, and you're going to get hurt. You know, you're going to wear yourself out. So you need to improve the business by getting better machines and better, I'm not saying buy the crazy stuff that I have, but buy better hand tools and sanding proceed, you know, get the best equipment you possibly can afford right now, and then save 10, 15% of your top line. And then put that into new equipment. That's only going to improve you, improve your staff. You should have auto purchasing of a lot of the stuff that we use, sanding pads, even sanders. Sanders go bad. Don't try to mess with it. Just get a new one. Skyler will love you. I just buy sanders every quarter. It just makes it a lot easier. Toss the old one, get a new one, or give it away. Give it down the line. The reason that we have two guys, or three, generally two, three guys. And if you want to know gross numbers, last year, I think we did 1.6. The year before was 1.4. The year before that was 1.3, 1.2, 1.1, something like that. So that's like the last 4 years. And those are all with two, three guys. I improve the guys and then I release them into the wild. So they apprentice with me for about 10,000 to 15,000 hours. And then after about 4 or 5 years, I get them an LLC and then I sub the work down to them and I start all over again. Actually, generally year three with one guy, I'll start apprenticing a new guy. That will be the third year guy's helper. And then they'll just switch. The reason that is I'm teaching people to be independent finishers and company owners themselves. And again, I don't want a huge staff where most people are just getting work to make sure their people are fed. that's really good. It's an honorable trait. But if you have 20 guys, it's really taxing. You're going to end up bringing home like 2 to 5, maybe 6% of your gross as net revenue for yourself. And it's the more people you have, the more taxing it is, especially in this high-end finish world, because you just can't maintain. You can't really maintain standards with that many people. There are a couple guys in this country that have 150 guys in their fence. I would say Shoreline is the best example of that. You know, they're just, Chris is just amazing at what he does. So if you really want to get huge and amazing, watch Shoreline. He's in a class all by himself. I don't think he's going to be touched by anybody. And that this is one really good fan.
Does refinishing. I don't think I've heard of him.
No, he does. He does like, he's just amazing. I mean, it's the amount of work that they kick out at, and the volume of operation that they do per house. You know, their repaints could be like hundreds of thousands of dollars. So they're bringing out 50 guys, you know, 15 trucks. Everybody's got air-assisted airless. You could look up to that level. That's not for me. I'm telling you, that's not for me. I don't want to be there. I'll get jobs that size, but that's not my bread and butter. I don't know if you should probably all take the DISC. If you haven't done your DISC assessment, find out who you are as a business owner and as a person, and then you'll find out where your happy place is, you know, owning a business. And for me, it's not 20 guys. I don't like the interpersonal relationship. Again, I'm like I always tell people I'm like the GM or the manager of the Yankees. Let's just put it that way. You have to dress the way I tell you. You have to shave. You have to do all these things. And if not, you're done. And we're talking about the Yankees in like the 70s, not today's Yankees. So for me, it's, are you pitching strikes? If you're not, you're off the team. Let's get somebody else, you know, call them up. And then, again, I'm not going to work with people today. So that's like 3-4 good things. Constantly upgrading your stuff and then passing your old equipment down line. Let the guys become independent. If you're constantly questioning what your people have or they don't have the right tools, it's all your fault at the end of the day. It all comes onto your shoulders. Right. Totally your fault. Are you prepared? Are they prepared? And if you're not preparing the guys to leave to be on their own, you're really not doing your job as an owner. And it sounds crazy that my guys go, but they're going to go anyway. They're going to start doing side work. They're going to realize what you're charging, and they're going to go no matter what. So a pay scale that's known for everybody when they come onto the staff, everyone starts at $10 an hour. They work their way up to 35. Then they do a 50% commission split, and then they're off on their own. And then they're ready for that. When they go on their own, they're getting like 75 to 80% of the gross on the job. And I pass it down because we have too many requests that I just can't get to. Last year, we tossed aside 400 or so requests that we just couldn't get to. It's not, you just can't get to them. So I could get to maybe 10, 15 extra a month or a year because I could pass it down to a group of guys. That's extra money to my pocket. The next thing is your ancillary business that you probably don't even realize you're passing up money. Countertops, backsplash, flooring. You don't do them in-house, but you need a good referral source. Happens every single kitchen we're in. The question is, are you going to replace your counter and backsplash? That's not for me to get the job. That's for me to make sure that I'm going to schedule this project correctly. And also, there's 10, 15% margin in there just for referring a countertop guy that I've used for the last 15 years. I want my client, if they're going to get a countertop, to use the same guy that I use all the time because our schedules can line up. I have good pool with him, and I know his work is good. Easy to catalog a relationship with every single vendor you need. You only need probably like 5 or 6 guys. You need an electrician, a plumber, countertop guy, tile guy, you know, for backsplashes, and a flooring guy. If you're doing interior paint, that should be another subgroup. But that ancillary company, that good referral source is going to make you extra margin and not put any strain on your people. You don't need extra people for that, and you're just going to get a commission off the top. I mean, that's like our business model in a sense. The procedure that we do on site, I don't know if you want to get into that or why it's better than everybody else. I mean, that's a pretty bold statement. But
that, brother, I mean, what this process is that you've developed, you're one of the only companies I've ever seen. And I know it's out there, the machine that you have. Tell me about how that's helped. Tell me what the thought process was making that investment, because it probably wasn't cheap. Can we dive into that?
Yeah, this is in the background. I don't know if you can see it back there. You see that?
Yeah, I see it. Yeah, that's the money maker.
Sort of, when it works. So the downside of having a big machine is, or the upside is, things go well when they go well. The downside is things go really bad when they don't go well. So getting a machine like that, you should be thinking that you're going to do 15 kitchens a week. That's the reality of how many jobs you need to do to buy that machine. I probably wouldn't buy that again, to be quite honest.
Really?
It isn't the best investment that you can make in this space. It really isn't. If you're going to do flatline finishing, if you're going to do like trim runoffs or hard, like the people that make the most money with that machine probably spray siding.
Right. And they're pumping because siding through it. Right?
It's a flat runoff. The finish is good. And you could produce a lot with it. So that machine, if you do doors, you could do 100 doors every 5 minutes, one side. The downside is you're changing out color. So our average kitchen is probably 40, 45 pieces. To do a color change out there or to spray, because that's water-based. If you're going to spray solvent in the booth, the time that I can get to a top coat in the booth versus the time for a clean out and waiting for the temperature to cool off and to respray, they don't always match up well. So we'll run that machine for big prime jobs. When we get our door orders in, we'll spray all the stuff through the primer. But I wouldn't recommend to anybody here, unless they called first and we talked about production and overall numbers, if they would actually benefit from doing that, or it would be a hindrance. If you want to finance that, I don't know what today's price is. They're probably starting at, with the Unidry, I don't know, I would say in the fives, maybe 600,000. But then there's a makeup unit that's 150,000. The pumps are like, everything is 20,000. I mean, anything you do, you're spending, it's not like, you know, you're going to get a bearing for 30 cents. It's $1,200 an hour to fix it. It's, you know, we don't use it. So if you're looking at finish work, that's good. It's great for marketing. If you want secrets, that's a great secret just to have. If you had pictures of it and showed people that, you know, that's what they think you're going to spray with. But to be quite honest, that's not the moneymaker in here. The moneymaker in here is people and their hands. That's really what the moneymaker is. That thing can't tell you if you sprayed it well. It could only do it exactly the same time every time. Again, when it's running, it's fantastic. When it's not running, it's really no fun and a big, big hindrance.
Well, that's good news for the trajectory of the trade, seeing as though AI seems to be, you know, finding its way in everything, that even something as sophisticated as that can't replace the good old hand, man.
Nothing can replace you touching, you know, your tactile, you know, your touch, your feel. Nothing will ever replace that. We bought on the other side, this thing is one of these huge brush sanders. I don't know. It's got like 40 heads on it. And, you know, we were talking about automation before. So this was right in the beginning of COVID. I bought this because sanding was a problem with the machine. At the end of the day, the thing can't really sand inside those tight corners on like a shaker door. Right. You're still going out by hand. There's some things you can replace. Machines do a really good job at production, but they really don't go. They don't do a very good job at doing things by hand. So I think in the trades, AI in the manufacturing sense, cheap Chinese stuff like edge banding. Yeah, get a machine for that. Like this thing is, I'm sitting right on top of our edge bander doing this video. This was a great save because it takes 20 minutes to do an edge band on something. This thing does it in 20 seconds. This is a Moxiwa. You can get, you know, they're like 15 grand. If you're doing shelves or whatever runoffs, great. This is a very low end investment. This is the smallest, most affordable automatic edge bander. I would suggest this over all the other things. The next machine I would do is like a sliding table saw for straight cuts. All this other stuff like CNC machines, the big sprayer, even the brush sander, I probably wouldn't recommend. What I would recommend is being really good at sanding and operating with your hands. Whatever you spray in the booth or wherever you're spraying the doors, be able to do that on site.
Are you actually doing estimates now that we get into like, you know, I'm just curious because you're telling me we have, you know, the Sophia the chat robot is, you know, and that's kind of my thought is like, you're in this shop a lot, but are you doing estimates? Are you shooting prices from the office? Like, how are you managing your time?
If you can't, you know, it's funny. I look at the, some of the groups and people are like, well, what should I charge for this? Like, what should I charge for this? What should I charge for this? And, you know, you're in a professional refinisher group and you're asking the audience what you should charge for this. And people are like, oh, you're too high. You're too low. If you don't have a standard price for everything that you do, you're guessing. You always have to think, I need to be able to sell my company. If I got hurt, I need somebody to be able to walk in here, take it over, or if I'm doing really well, sell it. If you don't have a standard operating procedure or pricing, standard operating pricing, what are you doing? It can't be like we do athletes, we do the coaching staff for the sports teams. They all get the same price that your neighbor gets. Just because you drive a Maybach or there's a Rolls Royce in the driveway doesn't mean that the price is different. So when I see pictures or people ask me to price this job out, it's the same price for everybody. You need to have a standard door price, a standard box price, or a general kitchen layout price, you know, for doing in-home stuff. Everything all the way down to how many pieces of tape or how many rolls of tape you're going to use by the job should be in your price. So it takes me about 2 minutes to price something out. All I have to do is do the piece count in the kitchen or, you know, with the photos. That's why the photos are the most important thing. We've been doing that way before COVID. COVID only just helped us, you know,
You were doing that way before, dude. Like, I think you were the first one to really introduce virtual estimating. I remember. And then I think ClickFunnels got a hold of you because I don't know if you know this, but I've built a lot of funnels with your face on it, dude. What? Tell me how that happened. Did they just like see that you were just using, like, did you discover ClickFunnels and they're like, dude, this guy's getting so many leads. Like, did they give you the licensing deal for how many funnels were built with your face?
Oh my God. Steve, I forget what his name was. Steve. Wow. That was years ago. I don't know. I joined ClickFunnels. I was like, you know, remember when WordPress was kind of the thing? We weren't really sure. Yeah, Wix was sort of there. Yeah. I joined ClickFunnels and I was like, I'll build the ugliest paint funnel. You know, I just need the name, the address, and right. I needed to grab their information and put it into an API or a webhook. Webhooks were kind of getting started. Webhook is basically when I can scrape data from a form and put it somewhere else, like your estimating system. I needed the two links to come together. ClickFunnels kind of was a good template, and then Zapier with the rest before you could do the actual open API coding. I built the funnel and I started just posting stuff into the group, and Steve Larson and Dave. So Steve, I did two interviews with him, and he was like, dude, you have the only actual brick and mortar company that is using this. And, you know,
it's so funny, dude.
I said, you know, all it is it's a very simple website. You grab the most important information and you contact them in 30 seconds. I mean, that's business. It's really, that was it. I mean, you gotta wipe away all, let the compressor run, but you gotta wipe away all the nonsense that people talk about in marketing and get down to the nuts and bolts. The nuts and bolts is when I call for a price for a car, I want to know what the car costs. That's it. That is generally all people want to know. I want my cabinets painted. How much does it cost? Well, do I want to drive to every single home and look for, you know, no, I don't. We probably get 5 to 10 leads a week. You can't drive around. If you're I'm the best operator we have. I'm not the guy doing 100% of the work. You have to request for me to do it. It's 30% more when I do the job. So there is time for me to do like estimates, but if I'm like going to the house to do estimates, but I limit myself to only do estimates when you have a sub-zero, you're in certain towns, or you're a high profile person. If I'm going to your house to do an estimate, it's going to be important for me to do it. Otherwise, we're just going to do it based on photos. ClickFunnels was just a really good landing page creator. That's what it came down to. I think the first year we used ClickFunnels, man, that was years ago. I think we did, we went from like 400 grand to 800 and then 9 and then 1. We still only had like two people. It was just a really easy way to get the information. That's all you really need. is the information and the photos. We were asking a million questions before. This is just going to get louder. We were asking a million questions. And I think at the end of it, at the end of our experiment, we only needed one question. Can you send me pictures? And if they sent pictures, the chances, the probability of closing that was a lot higher than if they didn't send photos. If they didn't send photos. Yeah. Listen, if you're interested in something, you're going to snap off three photos and then send it to me. That's all I needed. Anybody who says, well, why don't you just come out and give me a price? It's an automatic yellow flag and it's a no. Like, it doesn't, we're just not going to do it. So, you know, I think a lot of the times you have to learn your yellow flags and red flags in construction, especially in the finish world. You have to be able to really know, again, take this with a grain of salt, because if you need work, it's a different conversation I would have for you. But when you're a little comfortable, you can start grading your clients based on yellow flags and red flags. Red flags are automatic no. They get put into an archive list. Yellow flags, my antennas are up. We're really listening. We'll take multiple payments. We don't do 50-50 anyway, but we'll do like 30-30-30-10. Our minimum payments are 50-40-10. Anytime you get any yellow flags, and this is just mental notes, you start separating payments more. You got to make sure your paperwork is correct. You can get a divorce at any time. Those are the things I learned through ClickFunnels, not from ClickFunnels, but having a good landing page, because we got so many requests. Everybody wanted service, but they thought we were regular painters, where it was going to be $2,000 or $3,000.
Wild is how long ago you were doing that. Like, I think honestly, like generally, like I seen you do that when I was like, what the heck is he doing, dude? And now I'm like an automation freak. With that said, dude, you seem to be ahead of the curve. So I guess kind of as we wrap up, I'd like to know, what direction do you see the painting industry heading, bro? Like, from your, you know, mile high view of just like, dude, you've been ahead of the curve. So I know that you're probably always thinking like, where do you see that industry heading?
I think in the Finnish world, you have, if you look at some of the groups that were started, the couple that I'm admin of, you know, we started with like 50 people and then there was 4,000. One of them has like 45,000 people. So, you know, the competition is sort of there. You get kind of intimidated with that many people in the space, but in reality, it's probably 99% amateurs and home people who want to paint at home, and then the rest are professionals. So just get the mentality of the space, just clear it for yourself. Realize there's only a couple guys that are really your competition. Start with that mindset. The next is level up your game. I could tell you, you could come here through trainings and the chances of you doing it are good if you stay in touch with me. We've been doing apprenticeship across the country for since 2017, we started the Sprayman Group. I'm very accessible. I could grow people's companies. I could teach you how to finish. It's really up to you. So if the painting industry and the construction industry is really getting worse, to be totally frank, the people aren't working as much. They're not working as hard. They're trying to just skip steps and get things faster. That's why people are spraying airless. It's not the way to go. The way to go is not join the big train and do what everybody else is doing. You have to zig when everybody's zagging. You have to separate yourself, and you have to think about this 6 months in advance. So you'll see me spray a lot of solvents, get, you know, the stuff to spray solvents, because the time frame of producing really good finishes, first of all, solvent's just a better finish than water-based. Next is it's just faster. It's a lot faster. You don't have to worry about humidity, temperature, all these other factors. So we're going to produce a faster finish and a better finish, but you need specialized equipment and you need really good hands to do it. So teach the people. And if you don't know, it's not your space. It really isn't. You're a painter. Go back to interior painting. I'll tell you, I made the most money painting interior with one guy than I did doing this. With one guy, I would clear $6 to $1,000 a day, every single day painting inside, every single day. It was the easiest. The problem is, my oldest is 23. My youngest is 15. I'm in my 40s. You get old. You just can't do it anymore. I mean, you have to change. So if you're not ahead of your own curve, you know, you're just going to be behind. If you're doing what everybody else is doing and they're just doing it and they're not professional, don't follow them. Really don't follow somebody that you can look up to and then say, hey, can I call that person and find out what they're doing? And yeah, you can call. We've been training. You can come here. That's probably the best thing to do.
How do they get in touch with you, Jan?
We're going to start public. I don't even know if I could tell you this, but we are going to start doing trainings probably once a month, if not once a quarter, because what really makes me what gets to me is when you have people that are training other people just for money, they're not giving them really good advice. You know, they're not really teaching them how to do it at any sort of top level. They're teaching them like the homeowner or the interior painter how to just get by, how to kind of get it done, make it look good, and then make money. That's not going to push our finished work. You're just like everybody else. If you can't discern the difference between your spraying method for interior trim and fine finish cabinetry, you're just an interior painter. I hate to tell you that. And that's okay. Keep that space. You'll make a fortune. But don't pretend you're going to cross over and be a high-level finisher and try to compete with me if you're not going to be in the space. And I will tell people, if you're going to – like we do a lot of project management, which people give me their bid. I'm not the contractor, but I'll review the bid for a small fee, and then I'll tell you who to hire when among three other people or whatever it is. And if I'm between – if people are getting a price from me, I will tell them the other guys that are really good in this field. We're generally all within the same price, but some people just don't like, I'm not abrasive, but I'm very to the point. Some people don't like that. They want to be coddled more. And I'll give them to my competition that will coddle you to death. Good, decent finishers coddle you to death. Just not my space. Separate your way away from everyone else. You don't need this space like this. You don't need all the machines. Don't worry about automation in painting. In finishing, it's not going to happen. The robot painting the wall and all this nonsense. It's cool for, you know, it's cool to look. Most of those are AI videos. They're not real. It's cool. It's not going to happen. The best finishers like Ferrari, they still paint by hand. There's a difference between going to Mako to get your car painted or having the guy that paints the Ferrari. That's what you're trying to be. I always tell guys, and this is probably the same speech I gave at ClickFunnels, was we're the New York Yankees. Like, we're the Navy SEALs of painting. You're not going to make it. You're just not going to make the team. If you do make the team, the fucking pressure's up. The pressure's so high, but it's my job to shoulder that pressure. My job is to make the guys feel at home and comfortable, but knowing that the gavel's always going to, and the hammer's always going to fall. It's going to fall on me first, but it's really going to fall on them. If you don't have this high level, you're not going to make it when you're competing with somebody like me. So this may not be the right space for you. You want to be the average painter that's going to do charge $4,000 to $5,000 for a refinish. That's fantastic. But do you want to get $6,000 to $7,000 for the same job and maybe take a little less time than everybody else? That's where I want to get the really good people. And that's what we're training for. So when we do training, and again, I'm not trying to pitch this, but we give people the back end stuff. So they get the website, you know, they get the lead flow, because that part of the business drowns. Most contractors don't have an AI, they don't know technology like you and I know. I don't know anybody. There's a couple painters that have really good tech backgrounds that we talk to about building automations. I build it for them. But I don't know really anybody else that could get into the business space of this, like the tech side, and develop AI for their paint company without hiring another person to do it. So we're going to start doing it for other people. That's really what it comes down to. You know, that's what it's going to come down to. So you can come monthly. You can get trained. Your hood's right here. You can get trained, and then we'll give you the back end. We'll give you the lead flow. We probably should talk about dumping it into drip jobs, because, you know, that it's built for that open API call.
Yeah. No, I love it. So somebody wants to reach out, email, phone?
Yeah. Email, phone. Yeah.
What's the email?
Cardboard? Yeah, check over there. It's Yanni Ficaris at Gmail.
I'll put it in the bio. Yanni, man, I'm fired up, dude. Thank you for your time, brother. You're busy. You're in the shop hustling right now, doing what you do best, man. I think I wanted to get the word out in my audience is a lot of guys that you're right, man. It's that fast food mentality, that microwave, you know, let me just put some paint on them cabinets, bro. But like, you got to be a differentiator now, man. The world is watching this industry and being like, dude, the amount of money you can make here is insane, right? But there's not many people that are going to be a craftsman that are going to just put themselves in a different freaking category where you have a wait list of not only apprentices, but customers, dude. You know, best of both worlds, man.
Yeah, you should be booked out, I think, 6 to 8 weeks at least in this field. Good guys are probably booked out for half a year. You know, they have projects lined up by the quarter or by the season. So we generally will run two seasons. We'll run the before the beach season and then the fall season. That's kind of what we're running. And when you talk about shop setting, and you know, there is a little bit of fast food that you can run in a good shop setting to make a lot of money real quick. Like this guy's picking up his hood. The hoods, when we spray hoods, they're $400 or $500 plus material. They take 25 minutes to do, simple money. We do a lot of finishing for other painters, so we paint their doors. So a lot of the competition around here, I paint their doors because it's just better. Finish is better. It's better for them. Drop off on Monday, I pick up on Friday.
Yeah, that's so crazy.
Super easy. The other side of it that
I would definitely take. Well, what are you charging for that, dude? Just curious for the doors, interior doors.
$60 a door.
I would do that 100%. That would be no question if you were in my area.
No,
I drop them.
They're cabinet doors. So they
do you're
the body.
Doing a cabinet door.
Yeah, they do the body. They drop off their cabinet doors. We get the paint. We box it together. We spray their doors. They pick them. They drop them off on Friday. They pick them up next.
Stop it. Oh, my God.
If you ever come here, which you probably should, there's no marketing here. There's no sign. There's no Mike, you know, there's no Yanni's custom renovations here. So the guys will come here. They'll take pictures. It's their place. I don't fucking give a shit. It doesn't
fucking
matter.
We're going to start mailing you. We're going to overnight you to doors.
So we have guys that send it from out of state. We have guys that so we build. Well, I don't build, but we outsource the build. Yeah. I can't even build for cheaper than I can buy the built doors. Wow. So I want to tell you who I am just because I don't want them to be overwhelmed. But they'll ship it to us. We'll finish it, and then we'll ship it to them, or they come pick it up. It's just a lot.
Love
it. It's a lot fucking easier than them doing it. They don't have the space. They want to use a
they
better.
They don't say no. They're making money. You're making money.
I'm
everybody's
happy.
Happy.
I know my prices in volume. It goes down to $30 a door.
No kidding.
You know, guys are super happy. For me, it's quick. You know, the way that you have
those
to look
are,
at.
Those are good jobs to throw the apprentices on too.
Fuck no. No way. Absolutely
no?
not. They could prime, but your name is on.
True. You're regardless, your name, right?
Yeah. So the reason that it's quick money, and you always have to think about how do you make a certain amount of money to make a certain amount at the end of the year. So if you're going to make everybody's got this idea that they want to make $1 million a year, but out of $1 million, how much you actually make? That's really what it comes down to. So when you're
right
out there, bidding the job, doing the work, how much are you actually going to make? How do you make $1 million a year? You need to be producing about $3,000 a day of work. That's your number. That's really what it comes down to. So if you're going to do, you need to do 60 doors a day, $60 a piece, figure out what that number is. And that's your goal. Hit small step goals. So if you need to do $3,000 a day, what's your closing rate? If your closing rate is 70, 80%, you're way too cheap.
Mm.
Closing rate's 25%. You may be a little too high, or you know, you gotta figure out what's comfortable for you. So I could close every job, but I try to close about 30-35% of the jobs that we get in here. The cool thing about when you run an apprentice model, let's say that somebody comes in with 50, let's say 100 doors. No, let's say 50 doors just to make it really easy. And I'm charging $200, which I'm not. That's higher than what I charge. But some guys are out there charging more than me. $200 a door. It's $10,000 for the job. The person says, abso-fucking-lutely not. Not going to pay that. You go, okay. I have an apprentice that I could give this work to. In their head, they're like, oh, that sounds like I'm going to get the shaft. No, no way I'm going to do that. So you have, here's the secret tip is say, okay, I'm at 10,000. That's for me to do it. But my number one crew, he's at 8,000. My second number one crew, 8,000. So what I did was I took a lead that is going to flop and I'm not going to do anything with it. And then I offered a discount, but you have to give a trade. So it can't seem like to the person that they're buying a Ferrari, but somehow you're paying a Ford price. Doesn't make sense to them. So you have to do something to bring that money down and actually give yourself an incentive for doing that. What you do is you say, all right, we're going to do a marketing piece for your house. So the money, the discount that I'm going to give you, you're going to allow us full access, videotape. You're going to give us a review. We're going to do a video testimony at the end, and we're going to catalog it. We're going to put it on the website, put it into the blog. If you don't know how important blogging is, and I mean, we can go into all that, but the offset of the cost, you're still going to get the fucking job. I don't know what your metrics are for most of the paint companies, but let's say that you're trying to put in your pocket 20-30% of the actual overall job cost. If I'm not going to get the $10,000 job doing it myself, that's the number I need for me to actually do the work with my number one guy or with an apprentice. So if that's not going to happen, I need to make money without doing work. I'm going to pass it to the apprentices that I've trained that I know do my way, maybe not exactly to like 100%, but 97%. They're very good. I'm still going to make a 30% clip on that. And then we're not passing up the lead. That's why you need the network of people that you've trained, right, picked out of the nest. You need that.
The standards there, for
sure. So important. Yeah, it's so important. The last thing I'm going to tell you is what drives me ballistic is protecting yourself when you spray. The amount of amateur stuff that goes on in this industry is ridiculous. These are chemicals. You're going to get fucking cancer. You're going to get sick. God forbid I don't, but my dad died of a heart attack. My uncle, both painters, lung cancer. I mean, like, these guys were doing it with no respirator, no safety, nothing.
Yeah, I'm
still doing that. Don't be that guy. I'll give you two reasons. One, it's terrible for you. Two, it looks like crap when you're out there showing people, when you're comparing apples to my apples, it's totally different. One looks professional. You could be the best painter in the world, but if your on-site process is amateurish, it looks amateurish. And I get to abuse that. Don't give me the chance to abuse it. Yeah. The little bit of detail that it takes to tape, to make sure the tape is lined up, all the letters on the covering is exactly the same. It's a little obnoxious. It really is. But when the guys are bonused on when and how well their on-site photos look, that's so important. $100 extra in the job for someone who gives me the best photo of the week or whatever it's going to be. So important for them. It's going to get them elevated into being a better taper, a better masker. The last thing, I don't know, we could talk forever, but the robot asks for floor photos every day, twice a day, around 11 o'clock and around 4 o'clock. So Sophia is going to text my guys, hey, send me a floor shot right now. They got to take a picture of the place, mostly the floor and the countertop. If there's shit on there, they get docked. I don't want any equipment getting overspray on. I see guys spraying with their pumps, spraying with the fucking everything in the fucking space. It's so stupid. It's so stupid. The contamination, your equipment gets abused, and it looks sloppy. The thing about before and after photos, you don't see it. I mean, I do post a couple after photos. 82-83% of our first client contact is a woman. What the women want to see is what it's like when you're in my house. That's what they care about. Everybody knows what a white kitchen or a gray or a black kitchen looks like. I mean, granted, our finishes are really nice and you get to see it up close, et cetera. That's fine. But it's how these guys operated when we're in our house. Are they courteous? Are they kind? Mm. Do they smoke on site? You know, are they taking out my trash? Do they walk the dog? Do they cover it from the driveway into the house where nothing is not covered? Do they go, I can't believe they masked for 2 days. I can't, you know, wow them with the on-site during process. You're going to sell it. You have to back it up with the finish, but that helps. That alleviates a lot of the bullshit afterwards, if they see, wow, these guys really took care of this, there's nothing worse than somebody saying, you're going to fucking spray like this? Like, you didn't cover anything.
Nothing
like,
worked.
Go at it.
Yeah.
No good.
Yeah. I love the tabs on the team. Let me ask you this, and I don't know if you've played around. Have you used Company Cam at all? Have you played around with that?
Yep.
You like it?
Yeah. I mean, you could automate anything like that. I used it for a little bit. What I didn't like was, full transparency. If I can build the same platform without needing to buy it, I'll just build it. So when we catalog the photos, when the photos come in, this would be a technical between, sure. I guess you'd understand it. The photos are going to come in. We use a Twilio backbone to grab our information. Right. Twilio?
Yeah, you shoot it out through Twilio. Yeah.
Yeah. So it comes in. It's basically a two-way text with Sophia the robot. Sophia will take the picture. She'll convert that JPEG and put it in Dropbox and Google Drive and then house it in the photo. She'll create a folder in Dropbox
for that job.
So it's redundant.
Yeah.
And then when somebody approves the job, she'll create a folder just for photos, put that photo into the folder. When the guys are on site at that project, dump it into Dropbox. Then she'll pull it out of Dropbox and post it online. So a lot of my Facebook and Instagram is not me. It's the robot.
Kind of intertwines. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Man, I love it. We could definitely go on. I want to hear more. Maybe you join me again, man. But the idea behind me reaching out to you, brother, was just, I know your standard. I wanted to share that with my audience. You know, there's a lot of people getting into cabinet refinishing. As Yanni said here, he's opening up the doors to reach out to him. I'll drop his email in the description. Brother Yanni, thank you, man, for your time, my man.
All right, guys. Take care.
Yes, sir.